For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
And welcome. We're in the middle of a practice commitment period, a couple of months, and we've been talking about an old Zen text from the 9th century called the Precious Mara Samadhi, or the Jewel Mara Samadhi, and the chant that we did tonight is kind of a precursor to that, the harmony of difference and sameness. And I want to talk this evening about a line from the Jewel Mara Samadhi that relates to this earlier text. A silver bowl filled with snow, a heron hidden in the moon, taken as similar, they are not the same, not distinguished, their places are known. But before I talk about the silver bowl filled with snow, just to note that today is Earth Day, so happy Earth Day. And there would be lots of things to say about that if I weren't talking about the Jewel Mara Samadhi. Of course, they're not unrelated, but of course we know the Earth is very challenged now, and there are many issues to talk about, dangers from the tar sands and the Keystone Pipeline and fracking and nuclear power, and I'll talk more about all of that after our practice commitment period is finished, but I just wanted to say that also there are many people who are working to protect the Earth, so who are doing as the Jewel Mara Samadhi talks about failure to serve is no help, and fortunately there are lots of people who are helping, so just to say that. So this text we chanted tonight, the harmony of sameness and difference, is by another teacher in our lineage a few generations before, Dongshan, who wrote the Jewel Mara Samadhi, the teacher who wrote the Harmony of Difference and Sameness, who also wrote the Song of the Grass Hut we sometimes chant, is named Shuto or Sekito in Japanese. And this is kind of background directly to the Jewel Mara Samadhi. So these lines I want to talk about tonight, a silver bowl filled with snow, a heron hidden in the moon, taken as similar or literally, looking at the characters, taken as similar or they look similar, but they're not equal. They're mixed together, but we know their places. We know where each one is. So these are very strange, evocative images, and there's stories about them. The silver bowl filled with snow, I particularly want to talk about tonight. And we'll have some time for discussion too, but first I'll say a little bit about the heron hidden in the moon. So, the moon is an old image in Zen for wholeness, for perfection, for fullness, for enlightenment. And sometimes they talk about the full moon and the crescent moon and various aspects of the moon, but usually when they just say the moon, they're talking about the full round moon and the wholeness of that moon. And often in, as I've spoken about before, the moon is kind of more evocative and is seen more truly when it's not completely seen. You know, when it's seen through a haze or through a mist, or you know, often in East Asian paintings, you'll see the moon with some reeds or some something growing in front of it. They like to show that. But here it's a heron hidden in the moon. And the point is that herons are white. And so if you imagine a heron flying and, you know, there's this parent hidden in the moon. And actually, in East Asia, as I spoke about recently, there's a rabbit in the moon. We see a man in the moon, but in East Asia, they see a rabbit in the moon. But if you see the heron flying across the moon, well, if you get one snapshot, you might actually not notice the heron, but actually, you know, you can tell the heron's there. And yet, there's just this white wash. So we can distinguish them, and yet they're sort of the same. So what this is talking about is this kind of tension between the way in which we are all one and the way in which everything is different. So sameness has to do with, we could say, emptiness, with oneness. There are many ways in which the distinctions, when we see, as Hongzhi talks about in this precious mirror samadhi, the dharma of thusness, the reality of thusness. We are all just one. And yet, there are these particulars, are these differences. Our human minds rushes to the distinctions. So initially, you know, we see is distinctions. When we start to settle down and calm down and settle down, we can start to see this wholeness, this sameness. But what the visual mirror samadhi is about is this, actually there's this tension. We can't say one, we can't say two. And Shuto started to talk about it in the chant we just chanted, and the visual mirror samadhi goes into it further. We can see Dogen, when he came back from China to Japan, was asked what he brought, and he said, "Eyes horizontal, nose vertical. We're all the same that way." And yet, if we look around face to face, we're all different. So there's this tension, and this tension that Shuto started to talk about in the harmony of difference and sameness, between that which is universally true and the particulars, is one of the themes that the Jewel Mara Samadhi is about, and it gets developed into what's called the five ranks, and I'll come back to that towards the end this evening. But so one way to see this is the oneness, the oneness of the heron and the moon. They're both white. The other way, this other image is the silver bowl filled with snow. And this is a more complicated image. Literally, it's snow piled up, snow filling abundantly, snow abundant in a silver bowl. Well, snow and silver, snow is white, right? But as it starts to melt, as it glistens, you know, if you imagine like one of the silver, round silver bowls in the kitchen, one of the mixing bowls, you know, snow filling it up like a snow cone. Maybe the snow is kind of a little bit melting, a little bit. So is it full like this, or is it full like this? That's not an insignificant question. And if we look at it, can you see through the snow to the silver? Well, can we see through this? Is it silver? Or is it snow? Well, okay. There's a story about this, and it has to do with our lineage. And this is a rather involved story. But it's a story that's in one of the great koan collections, the Blue Cliff Record. It's case number 13. And it's actually And I'm only going to refer to a little bit of this story, but it's about a teacher named Ba Ling, who was a successor of a great teacher named Yunnan, not in the Soto lineage, but a related lineage. And monk asked him, "What is the school of Kanadeva?" And Ba Ling said, "Piling up snow in a silver bowl." So I want to talk about Kanadeva, because he is one of our ancestors in India. So this gets complicated. But we are from the school of Kanadeva. Kanadeva was a successor to the great teacher Nagarjuna. So I'll jump ahead a little bit. Nagarjuna was one of the great teachers of Buddhism in India, and he's considered the master of emptiness teaching. But he's actually he's in all of the lineages. All of the later Buddhist schools consider Nagarjuna one of their great patriarchs and ancestors. So the Tibetan schools and the Pure Land schools and Zen. Of course, the history of Zen in India, Indians weren't concerned about history so much. It's just not part of Indian culture. So we don't really know who were the teachers who kept alive this practice tradition that we do now in India. Later on in China, they made up stories about different Indian ancestors and we chant those sometimes. As a lineage of ancestors. There were many people who kept alive the tradition, women as well as men. But anyway, Nagarjuna was one of the great, great Buddhist teachers. And we don't even know exactly when he lived, maybe in the 200s, but give or take a century. But he was a master of emptiness teaching. And he was a master of Buddhist philosophy. And Kanadeva was one of his successors. So according to the Zen legends and Zen lore, we are from the school of Nagarjuna that came through Kanadeva. So there's a story about Kanadeva that has to do with snow in a silver bowl. So that's a little background. But I want to start with the introduction to this story in the Cliff Record. This is sort of poetic, and anyway, I don't know, I just liked it. It says, "Clouds are frozen over the great plains, but the whole world is not hidden. When snow covers the white flowers, it's hard to distinguish the outlines. Its coldness is as cold as snow and ice. Its fineness is as fine as rice powder. Its depths are hard for even a Buddha's eye to peer into. Its secrets are impossible for demons and outsiders to fathom." So I'm going to read that again. This is the introduction to the story about Ba Ling saying that Kanadeva's school is piling up snow in a silver bowl. So again, this has to do with this, these whiter shades of pale, or these many different aspects of white. "Clouds are frozen over the great plains, but the whole world is not hidden. When snow covers the white flowers, it's hard to distinguish the outlines. Its coldness is as cold as snow and ice. Its fineness is as fine as rice powder. Its depths are hard for even a Buddha's eye to peer into. Its secrets are impossible for demons and outsiders to fathom." So this gets to this question about how do we distinguish when everything looks the same. Of course, we start from everything looks different, and then, you know, as we start sitting practice, we start to see how things are the same. So there are there's a whole bunch of stories in here about Kanadeva, who before he even met Nagarjuna was this wild character who was engaged in various debates with various Buddhists. And anyway, it's a very colorful character. The great teacher Mazu said, "Whenever there are words and phrases, this is the Kanadeva school. Just this he considered to be principle." So he was very skilled at debating. He was very skilled at using language. which is kind of ironic given how he finally met and became a successor of Nagarjuna. So I'm going to tell that story from a teaching from one of the Japanese Soto teachers. But I'll just mention, the last thing I'll mention from this case has to do with his teacher Baling, who was asked by his teacher, said to his teacher Yunmen that I have three turning words, and this was his dharma. He said, "What is the path a clear-eyed person falls into a well? What is the sword so sharp it cuts a hair blown against it? Each branch of coral upholds the moon." And then he said, "What is the school of Kanadeva piling up snow in a silver bowl?" So these were his three turning phrases that Yunmen affirmed. So I can come back to those if anyone's interested. There's much more in this case, but I just wanted to introduce Kanadeva with that. So Kanadeva is in our lineage. He's one of the names that we chant. He's the one after Nagarjuna, who supposedly is in the Zen, Zen lineage. So the story about Kanadeva and Nagarjuna is interesting, and this directly has to do with the snow in a silver bowl. So this is from the Transmission of the Lamp, a text by Keizan, who was a few generations after Dogen and considered the second founder of Soto Zen in Japan. And I'm going to read more from this. And this is directly about Kanadeva and when he met Nagarjuna. So the first part, Kanadeva visited the great master Nagarjuna. Knowing this, that he was a person of wisdom, Nagarjuna sent an attendant out to place a bowl full of water in front of Kanadeva, just as the latter was about to reach the gate. So different versions of the story, so I'll talk about that in a bit. Nagarjuna then watched to see what Kanadeva would do. Kanadeva took a needle, and Thomas Cleary's translation here said he placed a needle on the surface of the water and brought it with him to meet Nagarjuna. Happily, they had a meeting of minds. Now, all the other translations say, and actually, I don't know about this, I actually picture it myself as they sat down together and Nagarjuna took a bowl of water and pushed it in front of Kanadeva, and Kanadeva took out a needle. And the text actually says he placed it in a bowl of water. Now, Tom Cleary, who's quite a bright fellow, says he placed it on the surface of the water. Other texts says it went into the water. So that's a question. So I'll just leave you to consider. Did the needle float on the top of the water, or did it go into the water? That's a significant question for our lineage. But at any rate, there's different versions of this, but Tom Cleary thinks that it's floated on the surface of the water. Anyway, there's more that's said in this text, and I'm going to read a lot of it. This is the image. There's a bowl of water, and there's this guy Kanadeva, and I guess I imagine it was a sewing needle, and he was used to sewing his robes. I don't know if he was a sewing teacher, but anyway, he had this needle, and he pulled it out. So again, our school is called the School of Kanadeva. The whole school of Zen is called the School of Kanadeva sometimes. And in his talk about this story, Keizan said, "It was like piling snow in a silver bowl, hiding a heron in the moonlight." Quoting the Jewel Mara Samadhi. He says, "Kanadeva especially upheld and expounded the religious way, and eventually was known throughout India as the School of Kanadeva, like piling snow in a silver bowl, hiding a heron in the moonlight." Because it was like this, when Nagarjuna and Kanadeva saw each other, a bowl full of water was immediately placed before the sea. Could inside and outside exist? Since it was a full bowl, there was no lack. So he makes the point of saying that this bowl was filled with water. This is also still water. Clear, absolutely clear, pure throughout. Expansive, filling, it is aware and radiant. Therefore, Kanadeva put a needle on the water and met with understanding. So, one point is that Nagarjuna placed this bowl of water in front of Kanadeva. Kanadeva took a needle and, again, here he says he put it on the water. Others say he put it in the water. But he took a needle and put it in the water. And because of that, Nagarjuna accepted him as a successor. Kezon says, it is necessary to reach the very bottom and the very top. There is no ultimate or phenomenal. Reaching this point, teacher and disciple can hardly be distinguished. When you array them, they're not the same. When you mix them, there are no traces. When you mix them together, there are no traces. Again, this is from exactly taken as similar. They are not the same, not distinguished. Their places are known. This matter is manifest by the raising, manifested by the raising of eyebrows and blinking of eyes. This matter is shown by seeing color and hearing sound. Therefore, there is nothing to name sound and color, no seeing or hearing to abandon. Round and bright, without form, it is like the transparency of clear water. It is like penetrating through the spiritual source and seeking the spiritual sword. The point appears everywhere, clear and bright, it pervades the mind. Water, too, pierces mountains with its flow and inundates the skies. So water is very powerful. The Grand Canyon is created by water. Very steady. Piercing, penetrating. A needle penetrates a bag and pierces a seed, yet water is, after all, not destroyed by anything. How could there be any tracks made in it? And a needle, to other things, is harder than a diamond. Do not entertain a dualistic understanding of this. Just swallow up, spit out, and think carefully and thoroughly. Even if you feel clear and pure, empty and fluid, right then, there must be a pervading firmness. The disasters of water, fire, and wind cannot impinge upon it, nor will the eons of becoming, subsistence, decay, and emptiness affect it. So, let me say a little bit about this. This needle in water, we could, and then I'll just finish with Kezon's capping phrase about this. Nagarjuna was a great philosopher and, again, talked about emptiness and the emptiness of emptiness. And he talked about the 18 kinds of emptiness and the most dangerous attachment, which is the attachment to emptiness. We could say the most dangerous attachment is the attachment to oneness. Now, of course, we know about the dangers of attachment to particulars and the whole, and our whole society running around trying to, consume as much as it can and being attached to materialistic things and particulars, But we've all seen through this. We're here. We're not concerned, seeing through that at least a little bit. We're concerned with spiritual practice and life, or else you wouldn't be here. So, so the other side is to see there's a wholeness. We've seen the moon. You've all glimpsed it, at least. But there's a warning that Nagarjuna made about the attachment to non-attachment. So it's not that we can escape from the particulars. So part of what's going on here and this dance of sameness and difference is how do we integrate seeing oneness with seeing difference, with returning to difference, with steadying, finding calm, finding a place of steadiness and calm on our cushions. Which, of course, this takes time. This is the work of Zen practice. But And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's not such a problem being in a Lay Sangha in Chicago. We've got plenty of things to distract us, and, you know, we don't have to worry so much about getting attached to emptiness or non-attachment. And yet, this is this tradition that we're part of that warns us, and Nagarjuna particularly warned us about that. But here comes Kanadeva, and Nagarjuna offers him this water, this bowl of water, full, peaceful, calm. And Kanadeva, what does he do? He drops a needle. So, what is this dance between particular and universal? So, you know, we could see the water as this kind of calm, universal, and the needle as sharp and penetrating, particular. So, part of what this has to do with, so this is at the beginning of the song, the Precious Samara Samadhi. Later on, it starts talking about five flavored herbs and the permutations of the fiveness of the fire hexagram and so forth, and five different kinds of ways in which newborn children are like the Buddha, and there's various interactions of this universal wholeness that we can glimpse, and the particulars and how they interact. So the point isn't to figure out that formula and get it down or anything like that. It's to see that there is this interactive possibility of bringing wholeness into our world, into our life, into the particulars of each of our lives. That's what this is about. So, Kanadeva dropped a needle in a bowl of water for us. So, Kezan at the end of talking about the story in Cleary's translation says, I have another humble saying to explain this story. And his verse is, one needle fishes all the waters of the ocean. Wherever it goes, the ferocious dragon can hardly conceal its body. So, snow in a silver bowl, needles in a silver bowl. Do people still read Kurt Vonnegut? I don't know. Some of you, anybody ever read Cat's Cradle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's an image there of, what's it called, ice nine? It's the kind of ice that you drop in water and the whole ocean turns to ice. And I sort of think about that with the snow in the silver bowl. But we don't want to do that. So, again, you know, part of the point of these Zen poems is just to play with these images and to see, you know, how do we use these stories and images to see how to bring our life to life. And I'm sorry if I've, you know, puzzled or confused anyone. But I'll stop there. Any responses, comments, questions, whatever? Jim?
I'm not sure where it goes, but I'm taken with this notion of the needle on the water and the needle in the water. The commentator who has the needle fishing the ocean figures that it's in, clearly figures that it's on.
Right.
The needle on the water calls to mind for me. Is that supposed to be a rudimentary kind of compass?
That's right. Yeah, surface tension, and then the needle points. Is it point north? Yeah. True north.
Point south.
The point south.
In China. That's how they.
Ah, and this is a story from China. No, actually, it's from India. So, of course, India and China have different species of dragons. I think anyway. So yeah, I think all the other translations I've seen, it goes in the water. Clear, but Tom Cleary's a very bright guy. He says it's on the water. I don't know. I'll leave that to you to decide. Other reflections on the snow in a silver bowl.
I was curious about the hair hidden in the moon.
What about it?
Is the hair considered to be a masculine or feminine character, do you know?
I think there are male and female herons, or else they wouldn't have survived.
Well, I know that, but I mean, is it considered to be like a...
I don't know.
Yeah,
anybody?
I think birds have males. There's two different sexes, but I don't think there's like an equivalent male. They're not very promiscuous males. From my understanding.
I know there's a different... I know there are different characters for some birds. There are different characters for male and female. For example, there's a different character for male and female phoenixes. You happen to have the character for male phoenix in your name. Yes, here's one.
Going back to the stay with Heron. I'm a little bit confused about the mechanics of, just the mechanics of the image itself. Because if you refer to snow in a silver bowl, it makes sense that, it sort of seems like what it's talking about is you have the whiteness of the snow and something like that in the silver of the bowl. So it kind of refers to the oneness, but it says you can still tell them apart.
Exactly.
But with the heron in the moon, it seems in a way, there's that bird hidden, which is strange. But it's just the opposite, because if you think about it, if you're looking at a full moon and a heron flies across it, it will not appear as white, it will appear as black. And so that even though anything that appears in front of the moon is going to appear, you're going to see the shadow side, it's going to be black.
Huh.
So it seems like the opposite, because you know that there's a oneness, they're both white, but what actually you're confronted with is a difference. But it doesn't seem like the poem's saying that, because it makes it sound like, something white gets in front of the moon and it just blends in, but that's really not how it works. So
I don't know. I've never actually seen a heron in front of the moon. So
but
I don't
you've
know.
Seen many other things in front of the moon.
They don't fly at night.
Oh, well.
But, anything you put in front of a...
Except during migration.
A bright light will appear...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Silhouette.
It's not an important point, but I just don't quite... I'm fine.
Yeah, well, they're using these images poetically. Actually, the character that says a heron, the verb that's for hidden also means a treasure. A heron is treasured in the moon. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the image breaks down, and what he's going for is the same sort of image as the snow covering the white flower petals. But that's a little different image than where the heron and the flower petals sort of disappearing into the formless snow.
Right. I mean, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah, it's opposite of the snow and the silver bowl, because what's formless is mounded up and it's taken form. But it's sitting in the silver bowl, and it does, if it's a polished silver bowl, there will be a reflection. So there's an interaction there between forms reflecting each other and showing their similarity. It's a little different.
I guess the question is, we talk about them as if they're equivalent, and it seems like they might be complementary in the sense that one is talking about losing sight of oneness, and one is talking about, possibly talking about losing sight of difference and sort of playing between how you avoid them.
I don't think that's right. That's like the poem generally. It goes back and forth between those images.
Okay.
We see the form, and then we have the images of emptiness, and there's that interaction throughout the poem. So I think that captures it just right. There are those two images where one is more predominant in one image, and immediately after there's another one where the emptiness, the heron is being swallowed up in the sense of emptiness. And you can see it, but the emphasis is on.
And the point is just the tension between things that are sort of the same but they're not, and things that are sort of different but not, and that's really the point of the image, I think. It's not a perfect image. And you know, again, is the needle silver? It goes into the silver bowl. I don't know if they had silver needles in India at that time.
The bowl in the story, the water, that bowl is silver?
Well, the bowl, I don't know. The bowl, I wasn't there, but the bowl in the Jhulmer Samadhi is silver.
Yeah. I was going to ask a question. So the needle on top of the water, the needle is supported by the water, and you might look at the water and say, well, it holds up the needle, what holds up the particular, and it's the whole vastness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the needle in the wall and the water is a really interesting image for the universal. You know, to put it, there's lots of different ways to talk about this: the universal and the particular, the ultimate and phenomena. And that's what's at issue here. You know, ultimate truths, and then each particular event, each particular thing that is that is it. So this foreshadows, you are not it, it actually is you. You are not, the needle is not the water, but the water is actually, well, anyway, I don't know how to translate it exactly, but this tension between each of us as individuals and the fact of our wholeness together, or the fact of our each being a reflection of everything, an example of everything, like the image of Indra's neck, where each jewel reflects everything. Other comments or questions? Laurel.
So, the very first time I ever sat Zazen, the talk was about the bowl with silver bowl with snow.
Ah.
So I sat and my legs hurt so bad, and then I heard this talk, and it was the most interesting thing I'd ever heard in my whole life.
Ah.
Even though I didn't understand it at all. And so here I am. So thank you.
Oh.
So great. Might have been given by you. It was in Northern California. I have no memory of who it was.
Oh.
A long time ago.
I used to live in Northern California a long time ago. Time for the four bodhisattva vows, but I just feel like we need one more needle. Bill.
Well, I was thinking of the song in the Cat's Cradle of Bakonin, the crazy religious figure that. How is that the Chinese dentist and the British queen? They all fit together in the same machine. And then I could probably remember some more of it, but the verses, or the chorus is something like, nice, nice, very nice, so many people in the same device. So it's got a little inner being going on before the Ice Nine bits. Anyway.
Oh, well, let's hope that we can protect the Earth from all the Ice Nine.